Generation and Change, a series of interviews concerning Custer County history and its changes as viewed by Red Mountain Valley residents. The following interview took place on October 6, 1980, in the home of Mr. and Mrs. Walter Hansen of Westcliff. Present were Mr. and Mrs. Hansen and Deborah Hood, who conducted the interview. Mr. and Mrs. Hansen, I'm going to ask you where your parents were born and how they came to this country. I'll change it.
My mother was born in Indianapolis, Indiana, mm-hmm. and she came to Garden City, Kansas, when she was about 16 years of age. My father was born in Missouri, Kearney County, Missouri. And he came to Kansas as a young man. And that is where they met and were married in Kansas, my parents were.
I see. There in Garden City.
Near Garden City, uh-huh. yes. And I was born in Kansas. Do you want the date, Debbie?
If you don't mind giving it.
No. November the 28th. 1914, and I was born near Holcomb, Kansas.
I'm familiar with that. It's not all that far from Garden City, is it?
No, it isn't too far from Garden mm-hmm. City. It's near Lakin, Kansas.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then we came to Colorado in 1918. I was just 3 years old when we came here. We came in the spring of 1918, and we came in a covered wagon.
For heaven's sake, yes. Do you remember any of that?
Yes, trip? I remember just a little of this trip. Now, we had two wagons. We had three horses, and one wagon was the covered wagon, which they fixed so my mother could cook. They put up the old cook stove uh-huh. in this covered wagon, and when it came time to cook a meal, they laid back the tarp and put the stovepipe on, and my mother cooked right there on the wagon.
Oh, for heaven's sake.
And then we also slept in the wagon.
Uh-huh.
Now, there were four of we children when we came to Colorado. And they fixed, well, it would be like bunk beds now.
Uh-huh.
They put springs and mattress up high in the bed of the wagon. And then we children slept on one down underneath. So we all six slept in these two beds in the wagon.
And how big were the wagons?
What would be the size of them? A bed of a wagon.
They probably weren't over 30 inches wide, maybe 36 inches wide, 3 feet.
Yeah.
There
were
would
these
be
the bunks?
Ma'am?
Were these the bunks or the bottom of the wagon?
The bottom of the wagon, yeah. So I imagine it would probably be, what is the standard bed? How wide is the standard bed?
54 inches.
Well, it wouldn't be that wide, probably 4 feet. I wouldn't know, David, tell you the truth, what size the wagon bed is.
I wouldn't know either, David. I'm not sure.
But when you stop and think about putting six people in a space like that, it's fortunate all of you got along, isn't it?
Yes, it is. We would have killed each other. But I can remember our riding along, and we children will be on the bed and looking out. Of course, you know how the back of the covered wagon would look, and we'd be looking out the back. Watching, you know, whatever there was to see out the back. And one of the horses hurt its ankle, and we had to stay over in, was it Rocky Ford, I think, until the ankle was better. And I can see my father doctoring the horse's ankle. They used hot vinegar and, you know, put cloths around it
yes.
and doctored the horse's ankle.
I've used it.
You've used it, so you know how bad it is. Mm-hmm. And let's see, then I went to school. Well, my folks homestead, I need to go back. I'm going to have this all plugged up for you.
I know you're not.
But my folks homesteaded. This was the Homestead Act, and this is why we came here.
I was just going to ask you,
why you had come.
Yes, and this is why we came here. My parents were not happy in Kansas. They didn't particularly like Kansas. So they had come here prior to this time, of course, and they loved it here. So they filed on 360 acres. And you see, you had to live on it a certain length of time, and you had to make certain improvements before you were deeded this land by the government. So my parents did this, and we were out north of town. It was 8 miles north of town, out by, well, it's where they filmed Comes a Horseman.
Oh, yes. That. Would this be west of Highway 69 or east of Highway 69?
It would be east of Highway 69. You would turn off there where Elton Camper's corner is, and you go Copper Gulch Road.
Oh, I see.
You go out that way. And you can go on through, you know, and get to Canyon City. Yes. Well, you can hit Highway 50 by going Copper Gulch. And of course, then my father would, well, we didn't always live on the ranch. We went to Chandler. I went my first year, 2 years of school at the Chandler School. My father didn't work in the mine, but he hauled coal from the mine to the coal car, the train, in Chandler.
Where was the Chandler School? I assume in Chandler, but I'm not familiar with the name.
Well, that town no longer exists. You see, this cuckoo mine, I suppose they ran out of the coal. And it didn't work anymore, and there was a Chandler mine too, and I presume these mines probably both ran out of coal and no longer functioned, so there was nothing to live in Chandler for.
I see.
So there's nothing there anymore. We were out there two or three years ago, and you can see the foundations where the houses were, and the stores, and the school, and all, but there's nothing left there anymore.
And where is it from where you lived?
From where we lived out there, oh, it's near Canyon City. It's only a few miles south of Canyon City, about 6 or 8 miles south of Canyon City. So it would have been probably 35 miles from where we lived, wouldn't it, somewhere in that neighborhood.
Now, how old were you when you started school?
I was 6. Well, I probably was 5 and then 6 in November, probably. And I think that I went the first 2 years of school.
And did you board in Chandler?
Well, we all lived in Chandler, just outside of Chandler. We lived near the cuckoo mine, and it was a big boarding house, and my mother ran the boarding house, and she had boarders. And we were a mile from school, and there was Blanche and Lawrence and myself, the three of us. We would walk to school then, and it was a great experience. Of course, it was quite a large school at that time.
I imagine it was.
Of course, there were just the 2 rooms, you know, they had the first 4 grades in one, and the last 4 in the other. And then we came back to the farm, or to the dry ranch. We always called it the dry ranch. So we came back up here. And then we children finished our education at ULAY school. We would go by buggy or sleigh, whichever, from the dry ranch or our home to ULAY.
And where was ULAY school?
Well, do you know where Donnie Camper lived when it burned?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that part of that was the old ULAY school.
I see. And for the record, why the name ULAY?
ULAY was the first town in Custer County. I think it comes from a French name, ULAY.
Mm-hmm.
It was a French community or a French descendants colony that settled that. That was one of the first, I think it was the first post office in Custer County.
I see. And ULAY was spelled ULA, wasn't it? And where was the town site of ULAY? Is it where present Westcliff is?
No, it's where Nellie Camper lives. Do you know where Nellie Camper lives now? That was the original site of the town site of ULAY.
I see. What? That sits out kind of on a rocky knoll in the middle of nowhere. What, do you know why they began a town there?
No, unless it would be on the stagecoach route
up from Texas Creek?
Cotopaxi,
oh.
Through to Rosita. It could have been on the, it could have been on Stage Road, yes. That's probably why they sell right there.
And what caused them to abandon it?
That I don't know.
I'm sorry about that question.
Well, that's a good question. Why did they abandon it? I don't know. And of course, that was before I remember.
I was going to ask you.
Yes, well, my time, too.
Yes, that's...
Mrs. Hansen, I need to back up, and for our tape, I need to know your maiden name.
Frida Nolida Ince.
Nolida, what a beautiful name.
Isn't it terrible? And I never liked it.
Oh.
And my and so then when I was married, I dropped the Nolida and took up the E as my middle name. And this hurt my mother. Not terribly, of course, but when it came time for me to get my birth certificate, well, then it really came out then.
But you no longer use Nolida.
Uh-huh. She knew I didn't, but I guess she hadn't thought very much about it, but it came the time that we all thought we should have our birth certificates, and we had to write to Kansas to get them. We could get them, though. We had no problem in getting
How
them.
How fortunate.
Yes.
Well, many of those records were lost during those times.
Yes.
They?
So we all have our birth certificates.
You're all legally born.
Yes, we're all legally born.
Well, I have to ask you one question about your original middle name. Was that a family name?
I don't think so. I don't know where my mother picked this name up. Now, you've never heard it before.
No.
I never have ever heard it, ever. But it was spelled N-E-L-I-D-A, Nolida.
Well, it really is beautiful.
Well, thank you. I should have thought it was way back, but I still don't.
Oh, let me catch Mr. Hansen up with him, and then I'm going to ask you some more questions about your childhood. Mr. Hansen, where is your family from?
My father came from Schleswig-Holstein, a seaport on the North Sea between Germany and Denmark.
I see.
And my mother came from Saxony, Germany. They came over. They came over at different times. They didn't come. Father came first, and my mother later. They were married in Rosita in 1887.
And they hadn't met.
No, they hadn't met in Germany. They didn't meet until they got to Rosita.
For heaven's sake. Did your mother come with her family to
yes,
America?
Yes, they came. She came with her family from Saxony, Germany.
And did your father work in the mines at Rosita?
Yes, he was a carpenter. He done the woodwork on the buildings and in the shaft. And but he wasn't a miner. He was a carpenter.
I see.
There were nine children in my family.
My goodness.
Four, five, six, seven boys and two girls. The oldest four boys, two of them died in infancy. Two of them died, one of them was seven and one was nine with diphtheria. One died in the evening and the other died the next morning.
My goodness, how tragic.
And I now only have one sister left. My other two brothers passed away in the last 5 years.
I see.
So there's just two of us left.
And Mr. Hansen, when were you born?
Born November the 30th, 1905.
Your birthdays are very close together, aren't they? And were you born in Rosita?
No, I was born in Silver Cliff.
I see. Did you grow up then in Silver Cliff?
Yes, yes. I grew up in Silver Cliff. I went through the eighth grade in Silver Cliff.
And that is, you must have gone to the school building that they are in the process of attempting to restore.
Yes, yes.
Mm-hmm.
At that time it had three rooms when I started school.
About how big was Silver Cliff at the time you were growing up?
Oh, I would say probably between 400 and 500.
Had it then dropped in size?
Yes, very much so.
Would this have been when the mines were a little bit past their boom period?
Yes, mm-hmm. The mines were going down.
I have understood that at one time Silver Cliff was a contender for the state capitol.
That's right. I have been told, I have nothing to prove it by, but I've been told that it only missed by one vote of being the capital of Colorado.
I heard it missed by three, I think. It was pretty close. Was the main source of income then for most of the people still the mines when you were growing up?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
That lived in Silver Cliff, yes.
Yes, yes. I'm figuring out how to phrase this. I'm interested in learning about furniture shops, furniture makers in Silver Cliff. The reason I ask is because of a piece of furniture I own.
I don't remember of anybody that they were manufactured furniture in Silver Cliff. They mm-hmm. might have, but not to my knowledge.
I see.
They had a big hardware store, or a big furniture store at one time, a man by the name of Woodside, William Woodside.
And, at that time, the freight lines were still running, and the railroads were here, weren't they?
Lines had quit running. The railroad was, yes. Mm-hmm.
Where were most of the goods shipped in from, furniture and clothing and so forth?
I would say probably Denver.
I see.
What is the name of the furniture that you want? Do you have a name on this furniture or something that you was
kind of looking? A.W. Silver Cliff.
A.W. A.W.
Well, that'd be Woodside.
No, his name is William, though. William Woodside.
I don't know. Well, we can figure out about that later. When you were growing up, going to the grocery store, for example, I'm sure was a bit different than it is nowadays. You probably, Mrs. Hansen, you for certain, your family living on the ranch part of the time, did you raise most of your food?
Yes. We always had chickens and a cow and this type of thing, and a big garden and so forth in the summer. Yes. Mm-hmm. And we children didn't get to come to town often. Of course, we went to school, mm-hmm. but we seldom came to town. But at that time, usually our parents would give us at least a nickel to buy candy while we were in town. And you could get a big sack full of candy for a nickel. And now you can't get a sucker for a nickel, I don't suppose. So it was a thrill to come to town and have your nickel to buy your bag full of candy.
Mr. Hansen, when you lived in Silver Cliff, of course, living in town, your food was provided a bit differently. How was it? Were you able to purchase milk and eggs from people who raised them?
We had a place where we had a couple of cows, and we raised some pigs and chickens and rabbits and had a big garden. And we would go out in the fall and help somebody dig potatoes for enough potatoes for our winter. And we raised most of our vegetables in our own garden. Had a very large garden, so uh-huh. that we could buy that. So about the only thing that you had to buy would be your staples, sugar and flour and a few things like
mm-hmm.
that. Mm-hmm. And usually my father, even after the mines closed, he still did carpenter work. But during the winter, there wasn't much carpenter work going on, so during the summer, he would stock up on flour and sugar and those kind of things, and then we had enough to get by in the winter.
Well, that aspect of it isn't a whole lot different than it is now. People in the area still buy when they make their most income, and then does them until the following year, doesn't
sure.
it? Mm-hmm. I'm curious, Mrs. Hansen, you came west literally in a covered wagon.
Yes.
Do you remember seeing automobiles as you were progressing on your way?
No, I don't recall seeing automobiles.
Uh-huh.
I'm sure there were some,
uh-huh.
but I don't remember. Now, our neighbors out on the dry ranch were the Colemans, Bessie and Ed and Bill Coleman.
Mm-hmm.
And I can remember Bill Coleman when he came home from the war. He had a motorcycle, and it had a sidecar. He had a sidecar for it. And I can remember my mother going to town with him. And she rode in the sidecar, and she took a bucket of eggs with her to take to the store. I guess I survived the trip. I don't know, Debbie. But she took eggs. You see, this was the way they bought their staples.
Uh-huh.
Eggs and butter and chickens and this type of thing was taken to town. To the grocery store, and in turn, we got flour and sugar and coffee, and the staples that we needed.
For heaven's sake, what did your mother think of riding in the sidecar?
Debbie, I'm not sure, but I'm sure she must have been thrilled when she came.
I'll bet she was.
To 1927. I quit when I was a junior because I had all the information that I wanted and I knew as much as the teachers did, so I quit. And then I went to work for out in the country as a hay hand and worked for some of the farmers out here.
Can you remember any of them you worked for?
Yes, John Hanson and Edward Hanson, and I worked for the Schultz brothers. And Mr. Holloway down here, Gollop Holloway.
Now that's a new name to me. Where did he live?
Right where this new
Roberts
Cattle Company.
Oh, just mm-hmm. practically outside your back door.
Then I went to work for John Hanson as a truck driver. And I drove truck for 13 years. I went to work for the Soil Conservation Service, and on a temporary basis. And the 1st of July came along, and they cut out the temporary help, so I was out of a job. So I went to work at school as the manual training teacher in school. When I went back to school, I discovered that I didn't have near enough education. Sorry that I didn't finish my high school education. So I was able, while I was at school, one of the principal was a very good friend of mine. He talked me into taking two subjects. I had 14 and took 16 credits to graduate. So I took two subjects while I taught manual training,
uh-huh.
enough to get my diploma. So I graduated in 1944. It took me from, 27 to 44. It took me 17 years to get through high school.
Well, but you got finished.
Yes.
That's more than a lot of people were able to do at that time.
This is true.
What were the subjects you took?
Chemistry and advanced arithmetic.
And where was it that you went to school? Went to high school?
Here at Custer County High.
At Custer County. And was it where it is now?
No, when we started it was above what is the grocery store now. It was upstairs in the, it's what the grocery store
where
now.
Where Mr. and Mrs. Payton live.
Mm-hmm.
For heaven's sake.
That's where we started high school, was up there.
Mrs. Hansen, were you able to continue on to high school?
Yes. And I graduated in 1932 from Custer County High School.
About the grocery store?
No. They built the high school, which, you know, they tore down a couple of years or so ago. They built it in 1924,
I think. Yes.
And so I went my high school years up at Custer County High.
I see.
And that's where it is now.
And this was really, really something to be able to get to go to high school, wasn't it?
Yes, yes. Now, my older sister and brother did not go to high school.
Uh-huh.
But I did, and both my sisters younger than I went to high school.
How fortunate you were, because I know several people I've talked with were not able to complete high school.
No. Now, the sister in Littleton, she's 2 years younger than I, and we came, well, my first year, I worked for Dr. and Mrs. Fee for my room and board and went to high school.
I see.
Probably the first 2 years. And then my sister, Iola, was old enough to go to high school, so my parents rented us a room, and we stayed in town and batched and went to school and worked for Miss Kettle to make some money to help put us through school.
Uh-huh.
But we both graduated from high school. And my sister Iola went on to college. She had 2 years of college.
Oh, my goodness. And where did she go?
She went to Western State.
In Gunnison?
Mm-hmm, yes. Mm-hmm.
How fortunate for you. How many of your friends at that time were able to have that much schooling, Mrs. Hanson?
Probably most of them, because you see, they would have been about my age.
Uh-huh.
And at that time, why, a good many of the young folks were going on to high school, out of grade school. So
mm-hmm.
probably most of my friends did get high school education. But I was certainly a frightened little country girl when I went into high school.
Oh, I can imagine you were.
I was.
How big was your high school class?
Well, when we graduated, there was 12. There were 6 boys and 6 girls.
That was handy for dances, wasn't it?
Yes, that was real good.
Mr. Hanson, you started high school a few years earlier than Mrs. Hanson. How large were the classes then?
I would say that there were 30 in the freshman class, I believe. Some of us had been out of school a year between 8th grade and the time they started high school, so that there was quite a few, they were about the same age. So I would say our freshman class was around 30.
Uh-huh.
And I think altogether the school probably had, the first high school we had, would be around 60 would be my estimate.
It's really quite a number of kids, isn't it?
Yes.
Mr. Hanson, I'd like to get back to your job with the Soil Conservation Service.
I started with the Soil Conservation Service on a permanent basis in 1945, and I retired in 1971. Mm-hmm. 26 and a half years with the service as an agriculture engineer.
What exactly did you do as an agricultural engineer?
We built stock water dams, erosion control dams, land leveling, drainage, contour farming, contour ditches, range management, just things like that.
Well, you must have seen quite a bit of change in the valley during those years, didn't you?
Yes, indeed. Yes, quite a bit. I can't exactly say. It would depend on what you were interested in as far as change is concerned. Attitude towards the Soil Conservation Service improved a great deal in those 26 years. It was hard to start because people weren't interested when I first went to work in soil conservation. It was something new,
mm-hmm.
and it had to be, people had to be educated to it, but it improved greatly. We had people who were very much against it when I went to work who turned out to be some of our best cooperators. So that it improved a great deal in the 26 and a half years that I worked for service.
I can imagine it did. You said that you worked on drainage and land contouring and so forth. Was this more in one area of the valley than another, or was it throughout the valley?
The whole, we had our district was Custer County. We had the entire county, so we did a lot of work around Wetmore. Well, we're in the Greenhorn Mountains and Hillside, out on the divide, all over the county.
Mm-hmm. Well, you probably helped many farms and ranches become much more productive by doing that, didn't you?
Yes.
Was this during the time when people, landowners, were kind of changing from small landowners to larger holdings?
Yes, much so.
Just as an example, what was perhaps the average size of landholding when you started in 1945?
Probably 1,000, 1,500 acres.
So that had progressed immensely from when the first families came into homestead, hadn't it?
That's right.
Did they homestead, 80-acre tracts, or was it 150?
It depended on what you could get in a tract that was all in one piece. And sometimes the Homestead Act called for 320 acres or 640. If you could get a whole section in one piece, why they homestead 640? If not, they took a half a section and maybe three quarters of a section, whatever they could get all in one piece.
Mm-hmm. I see. I have understood that when the first families in the German colony came in the 1870s into the south end of the valley, they were forced to settle up on what's commonly called the desert because every place else was willows. Were these mostly cleared away along Great Creek and Colony Creeks?
Yes, my belief is that long before the colony came in here, this was true of the creeks and so forth. I think that beaver had a lot to do with it. People coming in and trapping the beaver and molesting the upsetting the balance, nature's balance, had something to do with the change in the creeks and the runoff and so forth.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Perhaps you can answer this, when were most of the willows cleared away in the valley floor itself and that land made productive? I suppose it was a gradual thing.
Yes, indeed, and it has gone on until just the last few years.
Mm-hmm.
It's a gradual situation.
Mm-hmm. You said that attitude had changed during your time with the Soil Conservation Service. In what way?
Let me say that we're all people, and we hate to have anybody dictate to us what we should do and what we shouldn't do. So it was a process of educating people to make people realize that the Soil Conservation Service was based on actual experience, and to sell that to the general public to make him see that by spending a little money he could improve his property, he could reap more benefits from his land. That was, I think, it was a system of education, mostly, that did turn the trick.
Mm-hmm. That's very important, isn't
mm-hmm.
it? Mrs. Hansen, after you finished high school, did you work outside of the home, or were you married then shortly after?
No, I was out of high school about 18 months before I was married. And I worked for Mrs. Overveld as a housekeeper, and mm-hmm. helped cook and clean house and this type of thing.
What sort of jobs were available for young girls during that time?
Probably working, that type of work.
Mostly housekeeping.
Yes, I think so.
Helpers. I see.
I was trying to think. In my high school class, I think only one or two graduated from college. In fact, I think there were only that many that went to college.
I can imagine so. It was much less common, even when you graduated, than it is now.
Yes. Uh-huh. It was my desire to go to college. I wanted to be a school teacher. But I didn't. Of course, probably it's just as well. I probably wouldn't have been a good teacher anyway.
Then, did you do any work outside your home after you were married?
No. Then, of course, later I began with my sewing.
With your sewing?
Yes.
Yes.
And I've been doing it since, well, I started that probably in the, in the 40s. But it didn't get to be a full-time job until about probably in the late 50s.
My goodness, the style changes you've worked on.
Yes, it's been fun.
I'll bet it has been.
It's been very interesting. And of course, the most thrilling work to do is to sew for weddings.
Oh, I can imagine that it would be. Lots of headaches and times to be nervous.
But it's such a joy.
Oh, that's fantastic. You two have had a very full life. Do you have children?
One daughter and two granddaughters. That's just one daughter. She lives at Gunnison. She works in the First National Bank. And her husband is a custodian in the school system.
And she graduated from Western State College with a degree in secretarial science, it was called at that time.
I'd kind of like to change the subject here and talk about two sort of, well, depressing times in history, if you would. The first would be the Depression. How did this affect your families and other people that you knew of in the Valley?
I was very fortunate during the Depression because I had a steady job as a truck driver. We worked for $85 a month, and we would go to work. I would go to work at 6 o'clock in the morning, and most of the time it would be 10 o'clock before we got home. And the days that I didn't drive truck, I worked at the filling station. So that, but I was very, very fortunate in having a job because jobs were very scarce, hard to come by.
I can imagine that they were. What happened to the Valley during the Depression?
Oh, yes. We had what they called WPA, It was a government program, and they did about anything that you could think of. They worked on the roads, they worked on the streets, and
built bridges,
anything to keep them busy. They didn't receive very much money. They gave them food, commodities such as flour and sugar and lard and
canned goods,
clothing, bedding, just enough to keep the families together.
Uh-huh. Did you see a lot of people moving out of the Valley during that time, or were they even able to move?
They weren't even able to move. If you were on the WPA rolls, you stayed pretty well. Stayed pretty well, mm-hmm. Because if you went someplace else, you'd have to work your way in or almost starve to death before you could get on a relief roll. So the people stayed pretty well at the same time in the Valley. See, that lasted from 1931 till 1932 until Roosevelt's administration came along. He's the one who got us out of that.
About 36
or 37, yes, 4 or 5 years.
It was a very difficult period.
I can imagine that it was.
Yes.
Now, let's see. you were married during this time, weren't you?
Yes, we were married in 33.
In 33?
Yes.
Now I'll quit writing my notes here and get back to talking. I'm thinking of how to phrase this. What did the women, what did the housewives do during that time to help their husbands who weren't able to bring in any work?
Well, I know some of them worked. Of course, these commodities that were, you know, given to these poor people, well, there were workers in that area, you see, that would distribute those and were bookkeepers and so forth.
That's not there. I don't think the women had a job. No, I don't believe
they did. I don't think so. They were homemakers, but I can't remember them working very much. So I don't think so, do you?
Do you feel that perhaps rural areas, or at least small towns such as Westcliff and Silvercliff, were harder hit than the large cities when the Depression came, or was it easier for them?
It was a lot easier, I think, because there weren't so many of them. Mm-hmm. Your larger cities had such long breadlines and so many people that they didn't. Some of those people didn't work for a day or two, just barely enough to keep them alive. And on the WPA projects we had here, why, they worked nearly every day.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it would have been easier on people in a smaller community than it would in a large city.
I see.
And then, of course, we had the Dust Bowl days during this same period, wasn't
yes,
it?
Yes, well, that's what caused the Depression.
Depression.
Mm-hmm. How did the Dust Bowl affect the Valley? Was it really a part of the Dust Bowl, or did it miss it?
Not exactly. We had some of the dust, but not like they had in the
winter. We had to help with Ralph. We didn't
yes.
have any snow in the winter, and we didn't have any rain in summer for about 3 years, and it was very, very dry. All the great number of the creeks dried up, and all the springs, and everything was, we had a very bad drought. No dry land crops whatsoever,
mm-hmm.
no potatoes or anything of the sort. Only a small amount of irrigated crops is all they had in the valley.
Mm. It was very difficult then for people to survive during those years, wasn't it?
I think so, yes.
Mm-hmm. Of course, I imagine travel then was...
Restricted, yes. We had an automobile, but we had, that was during World War One, of course. We didn't have gas rationing during the Depression, did we?
No.
We didn't have money enough to buy gasoline. Right.
Didn't have to worry about it, did you? Well, gas rationing kind of leads me into my next question. I'm afraid we're going from bad to worse as far as subject matter here, but I'm interested in World War II and how it affected the people in the Valley. Were either of you affected personally by it, or did you have to go to war, Mr. Hanson?
No, I was too young for World War I, and I was too old for World War II. I was registered, but my draft number never came up. So that I was never involved in either one. I had a brother. My oldest brother was getting ready to go into World War One. He was to leave the day they signed the armistice. So that's how close our family came to getting involved in World War One. I had a brother-in-law who was in World War One, and I had a. Elmer, what is he? He'd be a...
He's my brother-in-law.
Your brother-in-law was
mm-hmm.
in World War
II.
Mm-hmm. I think that's all the members of the family that was ever involved in either World War I or II.
Were there a lot of men from the Valley who went to
yes.
both of the wars?
Yes, and there was quite a number from World War I and also World War II.
Sure.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Because there's quite a list of, you see the park over here is dedicated to those that...
Yes, I know it is.
Mm-hmm. There's quite a list of those that lost their lives in World War II.
Mm-hmm.
The difficult time in World War II, it seemed, was the rationing. The shortage, first of gasoline, and then sugar and all fats, for instance, lard and butter and margarine.
Soap.
And soap. And, of course, when you say sugar, that meant syrup and candy and all the things that take sugar. But occasionally we could get syrup. Of course, you did. You were allotted so much sugar, you know, each with your stamps, but it didn't go very far. But we learned to bake cake with syrup, Karo syrup.
Uh-huh.
And then for my bread,
We were so rudely interrupted. We were talking about sugar rationing in World War II. Would you like to continue, Mrs. Hansen?
Well, really, it didn't seem difficult at the time. You know, we learned to get by with what sugar we had. And when it came to the canning time, they always gave us extra stamps. Yes.
I was going to ask you about canning, because this was a great portion of your winter's food, was what you could can and preserve, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. Mm-hmm. And they always gave us extra sugar. All you needed to do was to tell them approximately how many quarts of fruit you were planning on canning, and then they would give you the sugar that they, the amount that they would allot for that amount of canning. So it really wasn't all that difficult. And as I think back over the Depression and also rationing and World War II, I felt this was a good education. I really did not suffer with during this time. We always had plenty to eat. We always had plenty to wear and plenty to keep us warm. So really, it didn't seem that difficult to me. And I feel now that if we were to have a depression, the young folks today would have a rough time. They have no idea about how to save and how to do without, or to make do with something else, perhaps wear hand-me-downs and this type of thing. So to me, it's been a good education, and I've had a good life.
I think that is a fantastic viewpoint of being one of the age group you were talking about. I can agree with you. I think probably people living in a small community such as Westcliff might be better off if we had a depression rather than people living in cities. But I cannot really personally project as to what I would do if there was no money tomorrow, if there was no grocery store available, no money to purchase with. Mr. Hansen, you were driving truck during the Depression, weren't you?
Yes.
How did you get gasoline? You must have been allotted.
Yes, we had gasoline enough for those, for the projects that the government supported. You could get all the gasoline you wanted. And we had gasoline coupons that for our own use, and they would allow for each automobile a certain amount of gallons.
Now, was this during the Depression or during World War II?
During World War II.
I see. And at that time, you were working with the Soil Conservation Service.
World War II?
Yes. No, World War II, you were going to high school again.
Yeah. Well, yes. I think that he just began working for the Soil Conservation Service about the close of World War II,
yes.
I believe.
Something I'm curious about, not having been there at the time, when World War II was over, were rations immediately lifted, or was this something you had to contend with for several months after?
Several months after, they were gradually lifted because the supply was short. You couldn't get an automobile. They had quit making automobiles, so you couldn't go out and buy a new one. You had to, if you could find a better used one than the one you had, you were fortunate. Shoes and a lot of other things that they didn't start making right away. We had to wait maybe 6 months, maybe a year before the supply caught up with the demand.
I see.
And even the materials for making garments, your dresses and so forth, this was difficult to find too during the war.
I'll bet it was. I remember my mother remarking that, of course, silk stockings were non-existent during the war, weren't they?
Yes, that's right. That is so true. I'd forgotten about it. And then soon after the war, then they came out with the nylon hose. And, of course, they are so much more practical, or were so much more practical than the silk was because they wore so much better. And I don't think silk hosiery are even available anymore, do you think?
I don't think so, except perhaps in specialty shops.
That might be.
Mm-hmm. I'd like to ask you about the changes that you have seen in the valley and the land and so forth somewhat, and mechanization and so forth since World War II.
It has become specialized, more specialized. People have gone into certain fields, either registered cattle or specialized in producing hay or summer range cattle.
Mm-hmm.
And the equipment has become much more sophisticated than it was when in the last few years. Machinery, as I remember back, tractors, rubber-tired small tractors, sold all the way from $1,000 to $1,500 now, and you buy farm machinery today that costs $30,000 to $40,000. So that there has been a tremendous amount of change in the type of equipment the farmer uses. And it's always been a mystery to me how the farmer today can afford to buy this high-priced equipment and still come out on top, because I don't believe that the money he gets for his produce or his products has kept up with the price of the machinery.
I can agree with that. When I was in college in economics, they called it perpetual indebtedness.
Yes, indeed. You bet.
And I think it has become a way of life for all too many people.
Mm-hmm.
This brings up another question I wanted to ask. I know that when my father was growing up in the hillside area, he picked lettuce and weeded lettuce and hoed lettuce, and he said he did not enjoy eating lettuce for several years after that. This was during a time when several large truck farms flourished in that area, wasn't it?
Yes.
Why are they no longer there? What has happened to them?
The when they took the railroad out, it took the market out of the produce business. You can't truck vegetables. You can't handle vegetables the same way that you could with railroads. You can't put them on truck. They had to be refrigerated and packed in ice and everything else to keep them fresh, and that would be almost impossible as today. So when they took the railroad out, that did away with the little truck farms.
I see. And when was the railroad taken out? It wasn't all that long ago, was it?
No, 1938, I believe, was the last time the train ran out of here.
And that was out of Westcliff?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Was there still a spur at Texas Creek at that time?
No, they took it out all the way then, last time.
You could, so they could load cattle at Texas Creek.
Oh, yes, they could still load cattle at Texas Creek, yes, mm-hmm. But no, the train didn't come up from Texas Creek, no.
No.
I see. Well, Mrs. Hanson, I think we're about to get this wound up here. I have one question that I neglected to ask you earlier that really intrigues me. You said as a girl when you lived out in the Copper, what we now know as the Copper Gulch area, you called your place the Dry Ranch.
Yes.
Why is that?
Well, it was dry. We depended completely on the rain for our moisture. There's no water for irrigating.
I see. Much different than the people who lived here in the valley itself at that time.
Yes. But now my father, we did some truck farming. We raised peas, and we picked peas. Uh-huh. And my father would take them to Hillside. They had a shed, you know, at Hillside. And we would pick peas. And then later in the day, toward late afternoon, I suppose, my father would load up what we had picked and would take them to the packing shed at Hillside, where they were sorted and packed in ice and put on the train to be shipped out. And then, of course, he did raise potatoes. There was 2 or 3 years he had a bumper crop of potatoes. And then we began having trouble with the bugs, psyllids or whatever they were, and problems. Mm-hmm. But he was known as the potato king in the valley. For a few years, but it didn't last long because then we got into the drought, didn't we? Was part of that problem too. Mm-hmm. And then later my father and my parents moved off the dry range. I think that was 42. Mother wasn't well. And my father decided he'd like to try a farm in town, in the valley, where there was irrigation. And they lived out. Well, Ralph Cook lives on the place now. I think at that time, Gottlob Frank mm-hmm. owned it. Mm-hmm. But they lived there for about a year, I think.
Your parents must have moved there shortly after my husband's grandparents moved away from that place.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. Your husband's grandparents would be...
Would have been Alma and Oscar Eichelman.
Oh, sure.
Because mm-hmm. they lived on that on the Ralph Cook place for years.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that Grandma told me in her interview that they moved to town in 1942.
Mm-hmm.
So it would have been
right
after. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. Mr. Hansen, I have one more question for you to clarify something we said at least a tape and a half ago. Was the name of the town that was the seaport from where your father came?
Schleswig-Holstein. S-C-H-L-E-W-I-C-H. Schleswig-Holstein.
And it was two words.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any idea what that would mean in English?
No. It was a name of a famous seaport. My granddad Hansen had sailing vessels on the North Sea, and they hauled cargo from one seaport to the other only mm-hmm. on the North Sea.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it has an English name. I think if you look on the map today and look on the map, it's still Schleswig. The name Holstein has been taken off of it.
Mm-hmm.
It's been cut down to one word. I looked it up here a while back, and so it's one of the major seaports on the North Sea.
Now that I remember my geography, I can remember the name.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. It's one of the famous big seaports on the North Sea.
I see. Well, Mr. and Mrs. Hansen, thank you for a lovely evening and a super interview.